Chapter 39. What kind of fundamental incompatibilities? I definitely did not screech. Because it feels like you're blowing the balloon arch up out of all proportion, which is, I suppose, at least appropriate for a balloon-based structure.
It is not, said Oliver tightly. The fucking balloon...
He broke off abruptly, as the waiter set down our pea and broad bean rotolos.
Thank you very much.
Then unbroke, equally abruptly.
Arch.
I know, it's what... I made the air-quotiest air quotes that ever air-quoted. The balloon arch represents. Which doesn't have to be anything, Oliver, it's fucking balloons. Oliver took a deep breath. I had a sinking feeling this was going to be logical and wordy, which was sad, because I usually found Oliver being logical and wordy very hot.
I realise you would prefer this to be simple, Lucien, but it isn't. Over the past year, you've said some things to me that have required me to do a certain amount of self-reflection, and I need to know the conclusions I've reached are acceptable to you, especially if we're going to spend our lives together.
I briefly put my throbbing head in my hands. Is this relationship drama, or a deposition?
I'm not totally convinced you know what a deposition is.
Fair.
But, he went on, I'm trying to make this as clear as I can, because I don't want there to be any misunderstandings or for either of us to make any mistakes.
You're not a mistake, I told him, less affectionately than the word suggested, but I'm starting to wonder if you think I am.
That's not in question. I just want to talk to you about how I'm feeling, I suppose.
I sat up and stabbed resentfully at my rotolo. How you're feeling about rainbow balloon arches?
In essence, yes.
He gave an anxious little sigh.
Because in a way, you're correct. I will never truly know if the reason if I am discomforted by the trappings of mainstream LGBTQ culture is because I was raised in an environment where they were viewed negatively, or because I simply don't feel included by them. Or indeed because I have legitimate concerns about their origins and increasing commercialization. And honestly, I don't think there's any way to disentangle those things.
This was turning into very much the opposite of the romantic meal I'd envisioned. Okay, that's good for you, I guess.
I just want you to... understand.
He was looking at me... kind of the way he had when he first told me he worked in criminal defence. And it made me feel... weird. Mostly good weird. Like, even after 3 years with Oliver, it still did strange things to my head and my heart that someone could care that much about what I thought. I put my fork down. Because suddenly, I really did want to... you know... understand what... I asked.
That I'll never be... that I'll never express my identity in the way you express your identity. And while...
His mouth turned up wryly.
That doesn't come from a wholly uncomplicated place. It isn't a flaw in who I am. It's just who I am.
I thought I did understand that. But then again, I'd clearly given Oliver the impression I didn't. And Oliver was way smarter than me. I do get that, I tried. It's just sometimes hard to get my brain around.
That's the problem. I'm not sure I want to be something that's hard to get your brain around.
This felt like it was teetering on the edge of a serious place. A potentially relationship-ending, marriage-breaking serious place. So, I gambled. Okay, but I think that ship has already sailed.
How reassuring.
He was giving me an arch look, but he seemed to be listening. Not like that, I just... You know, you think about things differently from me. About life, about the law, hell... I speared a piece of rotolo and waved it at him. Even about food. I don't want to be in a relationship with somebody I always agree with.
I'm not sure that being vegan is the same as processing my identity in a way you can't access.
Isn't it, though? I asked, hoping my double or nothing was going to come down double, not nothing. It's not like being gay. Being the kind of gay where you don't wear rainbows or go on marches.
I go on marches, Lucien. It's parties I have trouble with, not protests.
Okay, but I mean, I don't think being gay is more important to you than... I waved my hands in a tight little circle. All the rest of it. Like, you actually care about shit. Way more shit than I care about. And that doesn't mean you're letting the other side down or anything. It makes you like... like a 1,000-piece Moomin jigsaw with a wolf in a wig. Oliver stared blankly at me, which I probably deserved. Sorry, my mum's randomly got into jigsaws and maybe the Moomins. I should have just said, you're complicated, but all the bits make a nice picture. He thought about this for a long time, then gave up.
Thank you, I think.
Oliver, I'm sorry. I tried again. I never meant to make you feel that I thought you were, you know, doing gay wrong. Or that you had to be like me. Any more than you think I have to be like you. I paused. At least I hope you don't. Because if you do, you're fucked.
I've never wanted you to be anyone but yourself, said Oliver immediately. Because he was also way better at being reassuring than me.
And I don't want you to be anything but that either, I told him. So we're good. He wasn't giving me we're good face. He was giving me we might be good but face, which was better than we're fucked face, but not by much.
My lingering concern is that works in theory, but in practice, you being who you are and me being who I am may not work.
Shit. Not work how? And if you mention the fucking balloon arch one more time, I swear I'll...
You're the one who keeps bringing up the balloon arch. But it is an appropriate example. If we get married underneath a rainbow balloon arch, we'll be denying who I am. And if we don't, we'll be denying who you are. And while that's a relatively trivial matter on its own, these things can add up. Over the long term, they can add up catastrophically.
They haven't so far, I pointed out.
No, but marriage can change things. That's why the pictures from your bachelor party bothered me so much. You were so happy in them. But it was a happiness I don't think I could ever share with you. And, well, I suppose I wanted to make certain you knew that if you wanted to pursue it, I won't stand in your way.
Oh, fucking hell. He was really making this difficult. Sorry, are you dumping me because I enjoyed going to a party at a queer gallery?
I'm not dumping you at all.
He picked up his fork, eyed his rotolo, and then put the fork down again.
I think what I'm doing is giving you a chance to dump me. If you...
Now I what? I said, still at very much the wrong volume for this kind of restaurant. There was a pause. Oliver was breathing in a very, very careful way, and his eyes had gone their flattest, coldest grey.
When we first met, he went on doggedly, you were... we were both, but you especially were... in rather a bad place. And sometimes the person you need to be with when you're in a bad place isn't the person you want to be with when you're not.
My mouth literally fell open. Fortunately, I'd recently taken a sip of water, so it was empty. What the fuck? Of all the things I'd expected to go wrong this evening, you going full, I have healed you and now I set you free... was not on the shortlist.
I don't mean to...
Oliver broke off, looking embarrassed. As well he bloody well should.
That is,
He squirmed. Again, in a different context, it would have been cute.
I just saw the pictures of you looking happy and in your element, doing the sorts of things that, realistically, you're not likely to do very much of with me. And I suppose I got in my head.
Too fucking right you did. I kicked him under the table, entirely deliberately. I look happy in those pictures because I'm at a party where I'm celebrating the fact that I'm getting married to the man I love. Who is you? You fool? You numpty? You absolute pillock? He was blushing now. Really blushing.
Yes. Well, I suppose when you put it like that, it does make sense.
Somehow, impossibly, the blush got deeper.
You're a very entrancing man, Lucien. And you could be with someone equally entrancing. Someone with whom your life could be interesting and glamorous. Instead of, I suppose, whatever I can offer you. Which is, by comparison, rather quiet and ordinary.
My head was throbbing. I laid it momentarily on the table, which might have been disrespectful to the restaurant dining experience, but I was having a feel. For the record, and I can't believe you're making me say this, I've always found you pretty fucking entrancing.
Are you sure? He gave a little cough. Because right now, I feel like someone you argue about napkins and DJs with.
That was true, but it didn't seem fair to admit it. Yeah, but that's temporary. It's a wedding thing, not an us thing. God, I hoped it was a wedding thing, not an us thing. I levered myself back off the table. Oliver, I'm not going to lie. I had a great time last night. But the reason I had a great time was because when I lived that kind of life before, I was miserable and hating myself and trying to prove something to a world that could not conceivably have given less of a fuck. I reached for his hand, and he let me take it, the mediocre engagement ring I'd given him gleaming between us. Basically, that's the first time in a decade I've partied for fun. And I enjoyed it, and I maybe even needed it. But I also needed to be coming home to you. I mean, symbolically, because obviously I went back to the flat and face-planted on my couch. Oliver's fingers curled tightly around mine.
I don't want to be taking anything away from you, or turning you into someone you're not supposed to be.
I don't know who I'm supposed to be, I told him. I don't think anyone does. And being with you isn't a compromise for me. It's what I want. Otherwise, I wouldn't have fucking asked you to marry me. Oliver gave a little smile.
Yes, that was quite the gesture.
I know, right? I risked smiling back. Didn't think I had it in me. I must really love you or something.
Yes. Yes, you must.
The blush was playing an encore on Oliver's face.
I'm sorry. I've been quite silly tonight.
I rolled my eyes. I can't believe you tried to get me to dump you at Quo Vadis less than a week before our wedding.
What can I say? Perhaps this place brings out my insecurities.
Last time we were here, I reminded him, I pretended I spoke French to impress you.
Last time we were here, he replied, I was entirely convinced you despised me.
I gazed at him in an embarrassingly mushy way. I've never despised you, and I never will.
Oh, Lucien.
It was Oliver's driest voice.
You always say the most romantic things.
Hey, it could be worse. I could have called you a Moomin Jigsaw again. At last, he laughed. And, figuring I was onto a good thing, I decided to seal the deal romance-wise. How about we share a lemon posset for dessert?
That would be wonderful, replied Oliver,
for once letting himself enjoy a thing uncomplicatedly. Or at least he did, for about half a second.
Ah, except I believe it's made with cream.
I basked for a moment in having, very briefly, not fucked one thing up. Actually, when I booked, I told them this was our first date restaurant and that we'd had the lemon posset and you'd gone vegan since, but could they do something? And they said they could. Oliver's eyes got very close to teary again.
Lucien. He swallowed. That was terribly sweet of you.
If I'd been a lot more grown up, I'd have said, it was nothing. If I'd been slightly more grown up, I'd have said, anything for you, babe. But wanting to make someone happy as much as I wanted to make Oliver happy was a very naked feeling to be having in a restaurant. So, instead, I just gave an embarrassed cringe and said something that came out as, in her honour. By some magic I'd never quite mastered, Oliver caught the waiter's eye, seamlessly volunteered that the meal had been lovely, and from there segued into requesting a lemon posset with 2 spoons to finish. I should have got used to Oliver being good at this shit by now, but I hadn't. Really, all that had changed was that, instead of making me feel inadequate, it made me feel smug that my boyfriend, fiancé, was polite and considerate and confident and knew how to restaurant. You know I'm not letting you use that spoon, right? He rolled his eyes in his secretly into it way.
When did this become a thing with us?
Since we went to this restaurant, I told him, and you looked at a lemon posset like you wanted to have sex with it. I have to feed you the dessert so it's a threesome, not voyeurism.
I did not want to have sex with the lemon posset.
It was now Oliver's turn to speak slightly too loudly for the restaurant. He lowered his voice.
I wanted to have sex with you, but you were making it very clear there was no possibility of that happening.
Well? I grinned at him. Now you get us both.
Although, one of you only temporarily.
My grin froze. You are talking about the lemon posset, right? At this moment, the waiter returned with the requested posset, plus 2 spoons. It was as beautiful as it had been last time, all sunshine yellow and tempting.
Do you have something you want to tell me? I asked it, scowling.
It probably said something about our relationship, that Oliver had a specific exasperated fondness sigh.
Mr. Posset, remember that you have a right not to self-incriminate.
Yeah, I threw back, having seen many police procedurals. But it may harm its defence if it fails to mention when questioned something it later relies on in court. Snatching up both the posset and one of the spoons, Oliver half turned away from me.
Excuse me, I need to confer with my client.
By confer with, do you mean eat? I'm pretty sure you can get disbarred for that.
I can confidently say,
Oliver dug the spoon into Mr. Posset,
that I know of no barrister who has ever been disbarred for eating their clients.
But not because it's allowed, because it's never happened.
I think, said Oliver thoughtfully, it might be considered a violation of the core duty to act in the best interests of the client, and for that matter, the requirement not to behave in a manner that diminishes the trust the public places in the profession. But there's never technically been a test case on it.
Well, it's a good job this lemon posset is your secret lover and not your client.
Isn't it?
He reached across the table, offering me a generous spoon of the dessert I was now trying really hard not to think of as Mr. Posset. Thankfully, my appetite outweighed my empathy, which, thinking about it, was why I'd make a crap vegan. And anyway, Oliver looked ridiculously handsome just then, his eyes all softly silver, and the stern lines of his face gentled somehow. I leaned forward, and telling myself I was being sexy and elegant, and not looking at all like a plastic hippo in a family board game, accepted a mouthful of tart, lemony goodness. Even accounting for the no cows were harmed factor, it was amazing.
Oh my God, I've forgotten what this was.
Pardon? Asked Oliver. I said, Oh my God, I'd forgotten how good this was.
If I looked anything like that, I can see why you thought I was cheating. I chased a smudge from the corner of my lips.
Hey, your eating dessert face is way more cheating-y than my eating dessert face.
Logically, he pointed out, neither of us have any basis on which to make that comparison.
Yoinking the ramekin over to my side of the table, I took control of the situation. You either get to be pedantic or eat posset. Which is it going to be?
He lowered his lashes in mock contrition. Posset, please.
While Oliver's eating dessert face was sexy as fuck, his asking for dessert face was sexy as fucker. And for a moment, just for a moment, I half wished this was our first date again. I mean, not literally, because it had been a disaster, but I wanted to keep this. This almost fragile feeling of everything being what it was, and being for its own sake, and not needing to go anywhere or become anything else. But that was how relationships began. It wasn't how they lasted. You couldn't live forever on lemon posset and French toast. At some point you had to think, really think, about where you were going and what it meant. You had to ask if you were in this forever, and if you were, what you were going to do about it, and if you weren't, what you were even doing. You were either in or you were out. You either got married or you moved on. And I never wanted to move on. Oliver was the best thing that had ever happened to me, and I couldn't let him unhappen. If that meant fighting about bands and arguing about venues and making peace with his mother and endlessly rehashing a fucking balloon arch, then it was worth it. It had to be worth it. Because otherwise, what were we? Chapter 40. The good thing about getting married, I mean apart from the whole spending your life with the person you loved bit, was that it gave you a lot to do, which made it very difficult to have complicated feelings, or, to put it another way, very easy to avoid having them. And that worked for me right until the night before the wedding. I'd gone to bed early because I was trying to be responsible, but then I'd had to get out of bed to throw up. Then I'd gone back to bed, but I'd had to get up again to throw up again. And after throwing up for the third time, I called Bridge. Being Bridge, she answered, even though it was 3 in the morning.
Luke,
she asked, sleepy but doing her best.
Is everything okay?
I lay down on the bathroom floor. No, I keep vomiting, and I think that probably means something. Mumbly Tom noises drifted down the phone. Then I heard him getting up and moving into a different room, reasoning correctly that this was going to be a long call. Then Bridget's voice again.
What did you have for dinner?
I didn't have dinner. I felt too much like I was going to be sick, and then I was. Loads. And I feel like I'm going to be sick again, except I don't think there's any sick left to be, so I'm just sweating and heaving. Bridge thought for a moment.
It's all right to be nervous.
This isn't nervous, Bridge. This is my body telling me something is profoundly wrong.
Well?
She thought for another moment.
Take some milk of magnesia?
Another wave of nausea swept over me. No, I mean profoundly wrong emotionally.
It'll calm your stomach down,
she insisted. Still feeling wobbly in 6 different ways for 6 different reasons, I crawled upright and checked my bathroom cabinet. I don't have any. I took another look. Ibuprofen and Bongella.
I'll bring you something.
I could already hear her getting out of bed. You don't have to. Not bring something. I mean, you should stay at home in your home where you live with your husband who you're married to. The thumping and rustling from the other end of the line suggested she was already getting dressed.
I'll still be married when I get back. You've been my best friend for years. I'm not letting you down now.
You wouldn't be letting me down, I told her. You just wouldn't be letting me drag you out of bed at 3 a.m. when we're both getting up in 4 hours.
Well, there you are. I'm rising early, that's all. It's healthy. It's healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Checking the cabinet had taken it out of me, so I lay back down on the floor and tried to enjoy the cool of the tiles. Unfortunately, I couldn't enjoy anything right now. I'll be fine. It probably is just nerves. My stomach churned uneasily. Oh, God. Was this the universe punishing me for wishing Miles would shit himself on the way down the aisle? Besides, I went on, I think I might need to get some air.
I'll get some air with you,
cried Bridge, far too enthusiastically.
We can get air together.
Why? Do you think I'll need help carrying it? Bridge gave a kind of vindicated squeak.
See, you're being sarcastic. That means you're feeling better, which means I'm helping.
I shouldn't have called her. There was no way she was going to let me spend the few hours before my wedding puking alone into a toilet. Not if I could spend them puking with her. But I'd panicked, because I was getting married in the morning. And instead of feeling excited, or giddy, or a little bit anxious, I was feeling like an informer from a 70s mob movie being slowly drowned in cement. And there was no point pretending now that I hadn't known all along that she'd drop everything and come for me. Married or not, she was, after all, my best friend.
I'm calling a cab,
said Bridge from the other end of the phone.
Where shall I meet you?
I groaned and ground my face against the bathroom floor. Anywhere but here. The walls are closing in, and everything smells of vomit. In hindsight, anywhere but here hadn't been a helpful thing to say. Something that became only more apparent as I half climbed, half fell out of my own taxi and made my way to our agreed rendezvous point in the middle of the Millennium Bridge. Why? I asked, as soon as I was in earshot. Is this because your name is Bridge, so you thought of a bridge? Her ash blonde hair was whipping slightly in the wind.
Maybe. I had just woken up. Although, also the nice thing about being on a bridge is that if you're sick, you can go over the side.
I couldn't tell if that made me feel better or worse. What if I fall in the Thames?
Then wedding nerves will be the least of your worries.
Drawing my coat more tightly around me, I lurched over to the railing. Not because I had any intention of spewing over it, but because we were stuck on a bridge and there wasn't much else to do. It was a weird view because you had the city gleaming on either side, but the sky above and the river below were dull, black and voidy, which at least matched my mood. I don't think this is nerves, I said finally. I think this is I've made a terrible mistake. Bridge came and stood beside me.
Oh, it's so pretty at night,
she cooed. Bridge, what part of terrible mistake did you not hear?
The part where it makes any sense.
I didn't say it made sense. Folding my arms on the top of the railing, I sagged. I said it was how I felt. For a moment, Bridge was silent on the silent bridge.
Are you not in love with him anymore?
The thought of not being in love with Oliver wasn't even vomit-inducing. It was just unapproachable from any angle. Of course I'm in love with him.
Then everything is going to be fine.
Bridge put a comforting hand on my arm.
Love means never having to say, oh my God, I've made a terrible mistake.
Except that's not true, is it? You can love someone and still royally fuck up.
Yes, but because you love each other, you come through it. And that's what marriage is.
I buried my face even farther into the crook of my elbow and made an embarrassing, half-sobby noise. Is it really?
Yes,
said Bridge, with utter confidence. But how do you know? I asked. What if it's not? What if it's like fighting all the time, or one of you walking out in 3 years, or something you can't do at all because the law says your relationship doesn't count, or constantly trying to keep up with your ex and his twink husband, who is going to be way less cute when he gets older, and then he'll find out what a prick he's married, or...
Bridge made a confused but gamely sympathetic noise.
Aren't you overcomplicating this just a little?
Am I? How can I tell? I've never had to think about marriage before. When was I meant to think about it? In the incredibly narrow window between it becoming a legal option and my boyfriend selling me out to a newspaper with a red top?
I suppose, ideally...
Bridge was shuffling uncomfortably, her coat drawn tight around her, even though it was quite a mild spring evening.
Absolutely ideally, you'd have thought about it at least a little bit before you... you know... proposed?
I looked up from where I'd been making an unconvincing go of pretending not to cry. In case you haven't noticed, Bridge, I'm not an ideally sort of person. And now I'm stuck, because I'm getting married tomorrow, and I don't think I actually want to get married tomorrow. But if I don't, then I've destroyed the only good relationship I've ever had, and probably ever will have.
You must have wanted to get married, though.
Bridge had that hopeful but disoriented tone she always got when she butted up against ideas that didn't quite fit her view of the world.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have asked him at all. This is just cold feet.
My feet aren't the problem, I told her. The rest of me is. And I guess at the time I wasn't thinking about the future. I just knew I wanted to be with Oliver. And I wanted to show him that, and I didn't know how.
Bridge was staring at me in a way I never wanted my best friend to stare at me.
What do you mean, you didn't know how?
She asked.
You could have said, I love you and want to be with you, or...
Inspiration struck her.
Blowjobs. Men like blowjobs.
Sorry, are you saying my options were propose marriage or suck him off?
No,
said Bridge firmly.
The first thing I said you should do was tell him how you felt. And I think the fact that you blanked that option might mean something.
Oh, God. I grabbed at my hair. I'm just not very good at expressing myself emotionally. It was right after Miles's wedding and I was in a weird place. And it's really hard when you've been with someone a long time and it's working really well, but you've got no, like, way of showing or proving or...
I broke off.
And anyway, he said yes. What kind of arsehole says yes to a proposal from a famously self-destructive person a couple of days after his ex-boyfriend's wedding?
I don't know, said Bridge. I suppose someone who loves you and supports you and wants to be with you no matter what?
I gave another groan. The only thing that was stopping me from crying more was that I'd been sick enough that I was out of fluids. I know. What a bastard.
She was giving me strong stop-messing-about face.
This is serious, Luke. You're talking about potentially blowing up a wonderful relationship with a wonderful man. Are you sure you don't want to get married and aren't just being, you know, you?
Fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. I think I'm sure, Bridge. Like, we had this really nice evening at Quo Vadis.
Oh, your first date restaurant,
cried Bridge, clasping her hands.
That's so romantic.
Yes.
I found I was gripping the rail far too tightly, either for emphasis or security.
That was the problem. It was romantic. It was...
Well, actually, it had been fraught at the beginning. But then, it had been kind of perfect.
It was great. It was the best evening we'd had for ages. And I kept wishing we could just go back to that. Except that's not how relationships work.
There was an expression of deep sorrow in Bridge's eyes, like I was falling into a sad cloud. It was the expression she'd always go to when she was trying not to let me know how badly I'd let her down.
No, Luke. It's not.
I've fucked everything all the way up, haven't I? Bridge was uncharacteristically silent. "Bridge?" I asked.
"I'm thinking."
"And?"
"I think,"
she said slowly,
"you might have fucked everything all the way up."
If there was ever a time you didn't want someone to agree with you, this had been it. "What do I do?" She was silent again. And then...
"I suppose you've got three options."
"Okay."
"Get married anyway,"
she suggested. My stomach sloshed in time with the waters below, and my hands got insta-sweaty. "Not wild about that. Next."
"Leave Oliver at the altar."
"Also not great." My stomach continued to slosh, and my hands continued to sweat. "Three had better be a doozy."
"Hope really hard that the last few months have all been a dream?"
"I'm hoping," I said. "Is it working?"
"I don't know."
Bridge's eyes got wide and confused.
"I don't feel like I'm in someone else's dream. But how would I tell?"
"Is there a fourth option?" I asked, desperately.
"I could try to think of one,"
offered Bridge, ever supportive.
"But since the dream plan was the best I could come up with, it might take a while and be worse."
Oh, God. I'd had something wonderful, and I'd ruined it like I always did. "What if I just run away?"
"That's still leaving Oliver at the altar, only without having the guts to do it to his face."
"Cool," I said. "Let's do that one." Bridge subjected me to her sternest stare.
"I know you don't mean that, Luke."
"You're right, you're right." I paused. "What if I fake my death?"
4 months after his father's funeral. Oliver might take that quite badly too.
I turned my back to the river and sat on the ground, head tucked against my knees. Fuck. The hope it was all a dream plan is looking really shiny right now. Quietly, Bridge lowered herself down beside me.
"Well, I could slap you if you like, but I think you might have to accept that this actually is reality."
She was right. It sucked, but she was right. So it's be married when I don't want to be married, or tell the man I love, on our wedding day, that I don't want to marry him.
"Yes."
"Fuck."
"Yes."
I looked up, and she looked back. Sometimes I thought Bridge's capacity for compassion was endless, but maybe it just happened to be about the same as my capacity for bullshit. I suppose in many ways that was the same thing. "Leaving somebody at the altar is a pretty shitty thing to do, isn't it?" Bridge nodded. "And probably he'll dump me." That made my stomach move in a whole new and interesting way that I wished I hadn't learned it could move.
"I don't know. I think I would."
Her nose wrinkled.
"I mean, if I was standing there with Tom in front of all our friends and the vicar said, 'Do you take this woman?' and Tom said, 'No, but I'd still like to hang out,' I might not respond well."
I sighed. "Guess I really should have taken the blowjob option instead."
"That would have been simpler."
She put an arm around me.
"If this doesn't seem like a silly question, why don't you want to be married to Oliver?"
"I guess," I began, although I wasn't sure how I was going to continue. "I guess because me and Oliver, it's always been... we shouldn't work."
"Oh, but you do," Bridge insisted, "and I always knew you would."
"You didn't know. You happened to guess right." I sighed. "The truth is, I don't quite know how we're together. And it's not that we're fragile, it's just that we're our own thing. And marriage is its own thing. and I'm not sure those things fit.
You didn't think you and Oliver would fit at all, and you did.
I know, but this feels wrong, and being with Oliver has never felt wrong.
Getting married doesn't have to change anything, Bridge offered. It's just a party and a piece of paper.
It's not, though, is it? I said. It's everything marriage means to everyone who's ever been married ever, or known anybody who's ever been married ever, or everyone who's ever been told they can't get married ever. It's this huge thing that eats things, and I think it's going to eat me and Oliver. Bridge squidged a bit closer.
Have you thought about telling him this?
Yeah. The time to do so would have been literally any time before now. She made a nervous face.
So, that leaves option two?
I can't do that either. The thought of how badly that would hurt Oliver was like a knife in my balls.
It's one or two, Luke, said Bridge,
with gentle finality. Which made me realise, well past the 11th hour, that there wasn't really a choice here. It had to be option one. Because I loved Oliver, and, like a prick, I'd asked him to marry me, and, supportive of my bullshit as always, he'd said he would. The least I could do was not leave him at the altar. I had to see this through. Chapter 41. The happiest day of my life was passing in a miserable blur. Bridge got me home at about 6, and Priya picked me up an hour later, making certain to tell me I looked like crap, which I did. Oliver was going to be so proud to take this haggard, badly shaven wreck of a human being to be his lawful wedded husband. And now I'd been deposited in a side room at the Green Room. Why had we chosen a venue with multiple rooms that was only named after one of them, where I was managing very diligently not to jump out the window or drown myself in the tall Americano that Priya had bought me in an effort to get me functional? My brain was blank, apart from a scrolling marquee that read, "This is a terrible mistake. This is a terrible mistake." But we'd been through this last night. In the vortex of fuckery I'd made of my life, this was the least fucky way to fuck things. And we'd be fine. We'd be fine. We were a good couple. We worked. We weren't very good at organising weddings. But whatever happened with Oliver, I could be 100% certain I was never doing this again. So that was cool. I had learned a valuable lesson about myself and the world. Oh, God. I was going to throw up. Lucien. I heard Oliver come up behind me as I was crouched over a waste paper basket in a state of pre-upchuck preparedness. Are you all right? Totally fine, I told him. I just dropped some cufflinks.
You're not wearing cufflinks?
No, because I dropped them.
Your shirt has buttons on it.
Obviously. I sat back on my heels, because otherwise my chest would be hanging out.
On the cuffs.
Oh, right. Clearly the cufflink jig was up, so I switched to a different pretending everything was normal strategy. Anyway, shouldn't we be not seeing each other before the... Finally, I glanced Oliver's way, and realised that he looked, if anything, worse than I did.
I wasn't sure whether to be relieved or insulted.
Actually, are you okay? Oliver's mouth tightened. Then he stepped inside, closing the door behind him.
Frankly, no.
Fuck. He knew. He fucking knew. I had no idea how he knew, but he fucking knew. Look, I blurted, Oliver, whatever Bridge has told you, it's very out of context. Walking slowly, and a little unsteadily, Oliver pulled a chair over and sank down onto it. It was about the gravest I'd ever seen him, and I'd seen him at his father's funeral. "Oliver," I began, wanting to go into damage limitation mode, but still not sure what the damage was or how to limit it.
"Lucien."
It wasn't exactly a reply, because I'd barely said anything, and it wasn't exactly an interruption, because I hadn't been saying anything else. If I was lucky, we'd be able to pass the time until the ceremony just saying each other's names back and forth in tones of increasing concern. Unfortunately, Oliver thwarted that plan by putting his head in his hands and starting to cry, in that quiet, desperate way that people did when they were beyond wrecked. I was going to kill Bridge. I was going to kill Bridge with a spoon. How had she ever thought this was going to help? Unless this was option 4, in which case I had literally asked for it. "Oliver," I said again, not quite managing to get out of the saying name space. And since I was kind of already on my knees, I crawled over in what I hoped was a consoling rather than flat-out weird way. "It's going to be okay. I love you, and I want to be with you, and I'm ready to go through with this." Oliver sobbed.
"Please don't."
Oh God, oh God, oh God. I'd ruined my boyfriend. I'd ruined my boyfriend on the morning of our fucking wedding. I patted his knee like that was going to be any help at all. "Look, I know I can be flaky sometimes, and I get in my head, but I really am all in. I'm all in on you." At last, Oliver looked up. His eyes were red and swollen. He apparently hadn't slept any better than I had, which was weird when you set it against his wedding suit, which was formal to the point of vintage and immaculate in ways that neither of us seemed to be feeling right now.
"I mean it, Lucien. I need you to stop."
"But I'm trying to tell you that it's all right, that whatever happens, we..."
"I can't marry you."
The words made no sense. Like traffic lights in the rain. Like this blur of colour that took a moment to resolve into distinct shades of red and amber and green. "I can't marry you." What the fuck? I'd been up all last night worrying about this wanker's feelings, and here he was doing to me exactly what I had, with great maturity and compassion, decided I couldn't possibly do to him. Lurching to my feet, I grabbed the waste paper basket and upended it over Oliver's head, showering him in a confetti of old receipts, chocolate wrappers, and those little paper circles from the bottom of hole punches. "You bastard! You utter bastard!"
"I'm aware," he said,
with far too much dignity for a man with a crunchy wrapper on his shoulder,
"that this is selfish, and that..."
He had to stop, because he got all choked up again, for which, given the circumstances, I had zero sympathy. Well, maybe one sympathy. Make it 1.5.
"And that,"
he went on,
"I'm probably going to lose you."
I was trying to hold on to my anger, because the alternative was collapsing on the floor in a pool of broken heart and sad feels. "Yes, Oliver. Leaving me at the altar might just do that."
"I'm sorry,"
he said, voice breaking.
"I'm so, so sorry."
Deciding that avoiding the floor was delaying the inevitable, I crumbled down beside him. "Why didn't you say something sooner?" I asked him. And myself as well.
"Because I love you, and fully acknowledging the irony of this..."
With an attempt at composure, he plucked a discarded treasury tag from his collar.
"I was afraid of losing you."
It was getting hard to stay angry, because my relationship was dissolving, Oliver was falling apart, and I... let's be honest, was kind of being a massive hypocrite. "Well, it's good that you appreciate the irony," I told him, "because you picked a weird strategy, And an ineffective one, he agreed. I got it. I couldn't admit it, but I got it. I don't suppose it occurred to you to say no when I proposed? How could I? He gave me this devastated, half-pleading look. I know what it cost you to ask me, and I know what it meant. For a moment he seemed unable to go on. He just sat there breathing and looking sad. I didn't want to hurt you. Yeah. I prodded the waste paper basket with my toe and watched it roll across the floor, then roll a little way back as what was left of the contents settled on the bottom. Nice of you in theory. Not super great in practice. I'm sorry, said Oliver again. I don't think I understood quite how wrong this would feel. The last stubborn coffee grounds of my anger vanished down the emotional plug hole. Because it had felt wrong, and we'd both known it. I just wasn't sure who'd fucked up worse. Me, by doing nothing, or him, by doing something at the last possible second. While I'm not going to say I disagree, I will say dumping me at the altar feels pretty wrong too. Standing, Oliver collected the waste paper basket and set it carefully back in its place. Perhaps it was the only thing in the room he knew how to fix. I know how badly I've hurt you, Lucien. But... He returned to his seat. Would you truly rather I married you, even if it would make both of us miserable? I imagined the room outside, bristling with our friends, family and work colleagues I would rather not have invited. How they would all be sitting there, waiting for us to prove our relationship was just as good as theirs. And I remembered last night, standing on the Millennium Bridge with my best friend, trying not to throw up at the thought of letting Oliver down. Yes. My voice rose, in pitch, if not in volume. Because that's the polite thing to do. I mean, I didn't want to marry you either, but I was going to go through with it because I'm a great person, and I didn't want to embarrass you. A little pause. Pardon? Said Oliver. Welp. There went the moral high ground. Nothing. Did you just say, asked Oliver, that you didn't want to marry me either? That's not the point. The point is I love you so much I was willing to do it anyway. Twitching out his exquisitely chosen pocket square, Oliver dried his eyes. Well, that's very flattering, but clearly an abysmal idea. Whereas breaking up on our wedding day is a fucking corker. I drew my knees up to my chest and hid my face against them. This was, like, the worst day of my life. Even worse than the day I passed a newsstand and realised my entire relationship with Miles was now a tell-all story in the tabloids. At least then there'd been a clear villain. Now I was being left at the altar by a genuinely wonderful guy for reasons that were... Actually... Hey... I said, hang on, why don't you want to marry me? He gave me a challenging look.
Why don't you want to marry me?
Oh, no you don't, I wagged a finger at him. I'm a mess. I'm obviously going to have second thoughts about anything that looks even a little bit like commitment. You, though, you fucking love responsibility. What's wrong with me?
There's nothing wrong with you.
He vanished briefly behind his pocket square, emerging again slightly tear-stained.
Well, there's quite a lot wrong with you. There's quite a lot wrong with everybody. But my life is infinitely better with you in it.
And yet... I tried not to sound bitter. I failed hard.
It's marriage, Lucien.
He paused for a long moment.
I know you think I'm very... conventional. You've told me so repeatedly.
No, I protested, We discussed this, and we agreed you were a Moomin Jigsaw.
Then consider this part of my Moomin Jigsawness.
At that moment, the nice humanist lady we'd got to do our non-denominational queer-friendly ceremony stuck her head through the door.
10 minutes, guys.
Oliver and I stared at each other blankly. Great, I told her, giving her the least convincing thumbs up in the history of primates. Her gaze travelled over the scattering of waste paper and the two men who were blatantly still crying.
Everything all right?
Absolutely. My voice came out like a public service announcement from the 30s. What could possibly be un-all right?
Okay.
The nice humanist lady began a somewhat hasty retreat.
I'm just next door if you need anything.
Bugger, said Oliver, quietly.
I peeled myself off the floor and made a futile attempt to, in every sense of the word, groom myself. Well, I guess we'd better head on out there and tell everybody we know that our relationship is a great big joke.
Lucien.
Oliver caught my wrist with unexpected urgency.
Can I say something first?
His fingers on my skin were torturously familiar. I mean, do you have to?
Yes.
Part of me wanted to tell him no, that he had no right to ask this of me. But he kind of did. I shrugged. I guess you've got 10 minutes. He looked briefly flustered, like he'd just taken over the case and the court had denied him recess.
About marriage and the Moomin Jigsaw.
Clock's ticking, Oliver.
I know I don't like rainbows, he said, in an incredible rush. But that doesn't mean I feel represented by the trappings of heterosexuality either. And I know that, technically speaking, marriage is not an inherently straight institution. The thing is, it feels that way to me. It always has. And I'm not sure how to make it not. And I don't think I want to.
This would have been a lot to take in, even if we weren't on an 8-minute countdown. You loved Alex and Miffy's wedding. You were in your element.
Yes, because I wasn't supposed to feel part of it. I was supposed to watch it happen to other people. I enjoy going to the theatre. It doesn't mean I feel an intense desire to be an actor.
I glanced at the door, then back at Oliver. Is this going somewhere? Or do you want my last memory of my relationship to be a lecture on the social thingy paradigm of marriage?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Oliver's grip on my wrist tightened so abruptly, he nearly pulled me into his lap.
I don't want this to be your last memory of our relationship. I still want to be with you. I want to be with you desperately. I want to be with you more than I've ever wanted anything. I just don't want it to be within a framework of the social thingy paradigm of marriage.
This was so typical of Oliver. Not only did he want to dump me at the altar and still go out with me, he wanted me to reassess my entire worldview at the same time. But we were about to get married. We can't go from being married back to dating. That's not how it works.
Which is why, declared Oliver, marriage will always feel straight to me, because it presumes that a relationship is only valid if it follows a pattern that for most of our lives we were totally excluded from.
Did we have time for this? Was 5 minutes and counting before we were meant to be getting married the ideal window to debate the role of same-sex marriage within the wider context of queer self-expression? Okay, except now we can be included. So shouldn't we be, you know, trying to be? Oliver shrugged.
For some people, absolutely. But for me, It feels like a framework I didn't create and can't control that I'm expected to impose on my own life. And that's why we can't get married? I asked. Because, oddly enough, I didn't find this very comforting. You love me, and you want to be with me. You just don't want to do it in the way nearly all our friends have done. He stood, drawing me close with the lightest tug on my wrist. I don't know why I went, given I still strongly suspected I was angry at him. But I did. Is that so unthinkable? I don't know. I was tired enough and emotional enough that my brain was beginning to turn into an eel sandwich. And I only have 3 minutes to work it out. I'd been staring at the numbers on my phone, but then Oliver gently turned my face to his. Lucien, he said softly, you know you are the truest thing I have ever dared choose for myself, and we are the only thing I've ever had that I haven't let other people define for me. And suddenly, for the longest, shortest second of my life, I didn't feel tired anymore, or confused, or scared, because Oliver loved me. Oliver really loved me, and in this way that was just ours. And, my voice was a little shaky, that's why you're leaving me at the altar, because you want to be with me so much. It's unconventional, I confess. His eyes glimmered with something that might have been laughter, or might have been a few stray tears. But then you've never been a conventional person, and I'm perhaps not as conventional as I thought I was. You're a mess, I told him. Oh, a complete one. But I'm your mess, Lucien. And always will be, if... He hesitated, his stern mouth softening in that way that felt very particularly mine. If you still want me. How could anyone not want Oliver Blackwood? Unlike Bridge, I'd never bothered to imagine what it might be like to be proposed to, but I couldn't imagine it feeling better than this. Fine, I told him. Since you asked so nicely, I'll not marry you. And I guess the lack of sleep and the wedding day stress and the whole not getting married after all had finally caught up with Oliver, because he pulled me tightly into his arms and started laughing. Lucien O'Donnell, you have made me the happiest of men. There was a knock on the door, and the nice humanist minister stuck her head briefly back in.
1 minute, guys.
We'll be right out, I called, from where my head was buried in the crook of Oliver's neck. I don't know if we actually waited a minute, but then Oliver gently untangled us, took my hand, and led me through to face all the people who we loved, and who loved us, and who we'd massively inconvenienced for no reason. Mum, Judy, and Eugenie were in the front row, two of the three doing an excellent job of not licking the other guests. The Blackwood contingent was on the other side, Mia looking genuinely happy to be there, Miriam looking like social expectation in a cream dress. A couple of rows back, I caught sight of Bridge, wearing an enormous hat, and already crying on Tom's shoulder. The James Royce Royces, of course, were far more interested in Baby Jay than anything that could possibly be happening around them. And from there, it was just a supportive blur of older friends, nearish relations, and the co-workers who'd insisted on coming. At the front of the room, our best men were waiting for us. Priya, in deference to the occasion, had worn her formal docks. And the moment she laid eyes on us, she gave me the oddest little smirk, like she knew something was up, like she'd probably always known. As we entered, awkwardly in advance of our own music, there was a sudden silence. I didn't realise quite how many people were in my life until they were all in one smallish room, staring at me and wondering what the fuck I was doing. My hand wilted in Oliver's. Making a wedding happen had been bad enough.
I had no idea how to make one unhappen.
Thank you for coming, said Oliver,
as if he did this kind of thing all the time, which, between this and his dad's funeral, he almost did.
I'm afraid Lucien and I have decided that marriage isn't right for either of us, and we'd rather be together on our own terms. Please do enjoy the party, and make the most of the open bar.
And then we ran, hand in hand, up the aisle, out the doors, through the venue, and into the sudden storm that had turned a busy London street into... Well, okay, it was still a busy London street. But the pavement was shining silver, and the raindrops were playing our tune, and I was in Oliver's arms, and we were laughing and kissing. And all around us, the passers-by were putting up umbrellas in every colour of the rainbow.
This recording of Husband Material was presented by Dreamscape Media LLC. Narrated by Joe Jameson. Produced by Eric Black. Text copyright 2022 by Alexis Hall. Sound recording copyright 2022 by Dreamscape Media LLC. This recording may not be copied or played for an audience without the written permission of Dreamscape Media LLC. This recording was produced by arrangement with Sourcebooks, Inc. Thank you for listening. Please check dreamscapepublishing.com for Dreamscape's latest releases.